Welcome to the UCLA Anderson Fully Employed MBA Program Drive Time Podcast. My name is Dylan Stafford, and it is my very special pleasure, and I always say that, but I mean it extra special today. This is a combination podcast interview with two real topics and two very special guests. So all three of us are here together in my office on a Monday. And if we get interrupted, it will only be because one of my guests has to step away to go save a life. So with me today is Aviva Rigev, who is an alum and a graduate of the class of 2016. And Aviva is a clinical instructor in the Department of Anesthesiology here at UCLA Health. And I just learned an hour ago is actually teaching a class here at Anderson. And also is Juan Carlos Jimenez, we call JC, who is an associate clinical professor of vascular surgery here and an MBA candidate in the class of 2019. So I love Dean Olean likes to say when she introduces impressive people, she says, this person makes me feel like a little crumb. So I feel like a tiny little crumb in front of Aviva and JC, but I'm thrilled to get to interview you. I want to know, you know, what is it like to be a medical doctor who then does the extra above and beyond and earns an MBA? You're both, Aviva's a graduate of Flex, although you took other schedule choices during the second half of your program, and JC is in his first year is doing Flex. So we're going to talk about being an MD, being in Flex, and then our new 2017 podcast ad. I'm going to pick your brain for a couple of your productivity tips that each of you may use as you go through your life and your education and your career, so the rest of us mere mortals can learn.
Thanks,
John. So thank you guys for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, really, it's a real honor to be here, and thanks for inviting us to do this podcast.
So I think people are going to be curious. I've tried to set you up as the incredible people that you are. But why don't I let you each introduce yourself? And I guess we'll start with you, Aviva. Kind of tell people a little bit about your background and how you came to be already an alum of the program.
Okay, great. Thanks, Dylan. So I'm Aviva Rigev. As Dylan mentioned, I'm now on the faculty in the Department of Anesthesia at UCLA and a recent graduate of the FEMBA program. I started my education here at UCLA, so I'm a double Bruin. I then went to NYU for medical school and then came back to UCLA for residency and went ahead and enrolled in the MBA program during the residency. So that is how I am already here on the other end of it, which is a very nice place to be, I have to say. I think my own motivation in doing the MBA at this point, and I'm sure you'll hear both of us talk about this, is that I think the field of medicine is changing in ways that sometimes physicians who are just, knowledgeable in a clinical specialty may be at a little bit of a disadvantage. And I think there's also a lot of really interesting opportunities for physician leadership and for business-minded physicians to make really interesting advances in the medical field. And I felt that starting my career off having both of those skill sets would be really beneficial.
And it's so crazy how time flies. It seems like yesterday you and I sat at Cafe Il Tram over mm-hmm. here as you were thinking about this. And I don't know if I can say this or not, but at the end of the conversation, I was so, because I think maybe it was the end of the season. I don't know.
And I was late.
You were late.
I was already late.
And I was, because we, you know, we all very often for our PhDs and MDs will waive the GMAT, because I'm thinking mm-hmm. to myself, you know, and I said, well, you know, if you'd like a GMAT waiver, and you go, oh, no, I already took the GMAT. And then you told me your score. And I thought, wow, okay, you're admitted. Yes, moving along. But it's crazy. That seems like yesterday.
It's true. It was probably 4 years ago.
Yeah. And you're already a graduate.
It's true. And I did. I took my GMAT during medical school so that I would be ready to go.
And you were.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then you were doing your residency while you did FEMBA.
Yes, exactly. So the ability to have a flexible schedule, I don't know if we're supposed to talk about that yet.
But that's fine.
Yeah. So it was, you know, obviously residency is a pretty time-consuming process. So it was great to have some flexibility in the Anderson schedule.
And again, I get just intimidated by medical doctors, but I do know enough that every time I tell another medical doctor that you did this during residency, they all look at me like I'm lying to them. So mm-hmm. that's kind of an above and beyond crazy chapter of your life, above and beyond the normal, right?
It was a little bit crazy, yeah. Yeah. I don't really know what else to say about it.
I mean, but I think that's a remarkably impressive feat.
Thank you,
to be able to get through this program while you're doing a residency. I think that that's something that very few people could probably do.
Yeah, I guess from my perspective, I figured I would be very busy anyway, so I might as well just get it all over with, you know, get it all done at once.
That may be the best life hack for FIMBA students of any flavor ever. You're going to be busy anyway, so just might as well get it over with. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because we do get into those high momentum chapters of our lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wasn't going to be, you know, relaxing every day after work, no matter what I did. So, yeah.
Might as well earn another degree.
Why not?
Well, how about we introduce JC?
Well, my name is Juan Carlos Jimenez. JC Jimenez is what most people call me. I'm a, you know, I think I'm a little further down the road than Aviva is. At least, at that stage in my career, I grew up in the Southern California area, actually very close to UCLA. My sister went to UCLA. I used to come to UCLA football games when, you know, I was in high school. My friend had season tickets, and we were big, you know, UCLA football fans. Although, you know, I remember seeing, you know, Troy Aikman and you know, Gaston Green, all these great, you know, football players from UCLA, and I was a big fan. I did my undergraduate at UC Berkeley as a psychology major, and then I did my medical school and my general surgery residency at UC Irvine. After my residency in surgery, extra vascular surgery training is 2 years, and so I came up to, you know, was fortunately accepted here at UCLA for a vascular surgery fellowship, extra training, and then I've been in the division as an assistant professor and now associate professor for the last 10 years. So UCLA, you know, obviously has been a, you know, the UCLA Medical Center has been a very fond experience for me. I mean, it's a very great, you know, it's a very great place to work, just like Aviva would probably, you know, she would probably support that. You know, my job on a daily basis is, it's a pretty rigorous career. I mean, I think that most people would agree, I mean, surgeons and non-surgeons alike, that, you know, vascular surgery along with, you know, a field like neurosurgery or trauma surgery or, you know, other specialties are really, you know, some of the more at least time-consuming specialties in medicine, just because a good percentage of our practice is either urgent or emergent, right? So, yeah, I would say that a good maybe 30% of my practice, of my cases are, you know, some, an on-call case, a gunshot wound to a blood vessel, stab wound to, you know, to the neck. I mean, some kind of emergency case. I mean, any time a blood vessel needs to be fixed, you know, usually a vascular surgeon is called. And so there's, you know, there's a fair amount of call involved. So that's why, you know, I always wanted to get my MBA. I was actually considering it down at UC Irvine, you know, when I was there, but I never thought I would have, you know, the time or at least the discipline or the organization to do it. And I think that once I looked into the Flex program here at UCLA Anderson, you know, as I did more research, I found that the tremendous flexibility allowed by the program was really the only type of program that I could enter and complete. I mean, there, you know, any less flexible a schedule, I could not be able to do with my schedule. Mm-hmm. So it's been a nice change of pace to, you know, focus on, you know, I usually focus on patient care 100% of the time, and now I have, you know, to go home and do homework and case projects, and I'm, you know, I'm learning how to use Google Hangouts for the first time, and I feel like I'm a little bit behind with regard to, you know, the tech aspect of it and the networking aspect, you know, the networking apps and things that Anderson students are so adept at, but I'm learning slowly.
Okay, well, that's very, you know, I think a beginner's mind, that's a very humble thing for you to share. You know, I'm sure your classmates feel a tad behind their vascular surgery skills. And I love this. I have a copy of Vascular Surgery by Wilson Jimenez Veith and Naylor Buckles on my desk as a thank you from you. So tell everybody about your textbook that you just published.
You know, thanks, Dylan. You know, it's, Dr. Wilson, Eric Wilson was my, he was the chairman of surgery at UC Irvine and has been my mentor for many years. He has been publishing this book now for many years. He had three editions of the book, and he asked me to help, you know, in editing the textbook this time around for the fourth edition. I was honored, you know, to do so. I've always really enjoyed writing and editing manuscripts and publishing papers. I mean, it's always been a little bit, you know, I feel like it's been natural to me. I feel that writing and kind of more right-brained activities come easier to me than left-brain activities or more quantitative, you know, math-oriented, you know, classes. And thus, you know, I find, you know, with regard to Anderson, also this first year, I found that the, you know, accounting and statistics have been, you know, more challenging to me. I mean, it's a very, very challenging curriculum from top to bottom, no question about it. But I tend to kind of engage and enjoy kind of more right-brained activities. So editing a textbook definitely, you know, allows you to write, I wrote maybe four or five chapters in it. And I edited, you know, half the textbook with Dr. Wilson, who also did a lot of work. So I had edited, in the past, I have another textbook that I edited. It was, you know, a smaller textbook aimed at medical students and residents, like a little kind of handbook. But this certainly was a tremendous amount of work. But it's a very satisfying, you know, feeling to get that, you know, to get that shipment in the mail and open up and, you know, see the completed product. I mean, it's you know, so then that's, you know, one of the reasons why we do it. So, well, thank you.
That's fantastic. I can't remember. I think we're Facebook friends. I don't know if I saw a Facebook post. I forget who brought it to my attention that. So it was published here in the last few months during your first year, but you must have done the work prior to FEMBA starting, or were you still working on it last quarter?
Yeah, no, quarter? We started it 3 years ago.
Okay.
So it's, you know, to bring a textbook, a new edition to fruition usually takes about three years or so. And really the first stages of the product usually involve identifying authors, you know, around the world to write chapters, you know, experts to write chapters on these topics. And one of the special things about this textbook, you know, in particular is we used a wide range of European authors. Two of the editors, Ross Naylor and John Buckles, are European. They're English, and so they were able to reach out to, you know, their network of European experts in vascular surgery where they don't have a lot of the FDA restraints that we do. And they, you know, in general, you know, it's believed that in Europe, you know, surgeons and, you know, at least with regard to vascular surgeons, really are able to push the envelope a little more than they are here. And so I think we were able to get that unique, you know, perspective, which is great.
Well, why don't we kind of talk a little bit about the medical reality that is, you know, central to your careers, and then sort of the extension of that, what had you want to add the MBA to your skill set? And we'll start with you again, Aviva, because I guess you have the perspective of, you know, you've gone all the way through the program, and you've even had almost a year to digest.
Almost
a year. Life post MBA. So you're post residency, I guess. Are you done?
Yeah.
Okay. Post residency, post MBA. You must feel like a human being again.
You would think so. There's always so much to do.
Imagine.
It's amazing. So I would say, you know, finishing, because I finished the residency and the MBA around the same time, and I was hired to start basically immediately at UCLA, so staying in the same place. And I would say right away I saw the impact of the MBA on my career. For one thing, probably, and even getting the job that I did, I don't think that, you know, I don't think I'd be in the same position without having that additional training. And I spend a portion of my time, about 30% of my time, is dedicated to non-clinical activities. And most of that involves either education or some sort of administrative operational projects, that a lot of it I use the MBA on a, you know, for most of that. So I think it's made my job a lot more interesting. For one thing, there's a lot more variety in what I do. You know, I think otherwise the day-to-day being in the operating room. So, you know, JC's job, and I have to say everything, basically every surgery you do is a patient who, you know, their life or their limbs are at risk. So absolutely a life-saving job. And in anesthesia, that happens a fair amount as well. So, you know, we're in the operating room with patients who are all sorts of varieties of sick, some healthier than others, but it can be a pretty demanding job. The hours can be long. There can be a fair amount of stress, and it's really nice to have another component of my job that has a completely different skill set. And, you know, I'm thinking about things in totally different ways, and nobody is going to die, which is, which is nice. You know, it's a nice thing to think about.
Yeah, hopefully nobody's going to die during finance class.
No, yeah, so it's great. It's a, you know, I feel like I can be a little bit more creative. I can use interpersonal skills a little more because being in the operating room often, you know, you work with your surgeons, and this was actually how we wound up doing this podcast, I think, was that JC and I would see each other in the operating room sometimes and talk about our experiences here at Anderson. But, you know, it's often you're focused on the patient, so you're not necessarily working you're collaborating, but centered around one thing. You're not necessarily feeling like you're getting that much interpersonal interaction. So I think it's really nice to use networking to kind of draw from people with other specialties, with different expertise, and, you know, really create some new roads that way.
Yeah, I think that it's very interesting because the perspective, even after only 2 quarters, I mean, I feel like I have a different and unique perspective from what I've learned, you know, in the curriculum here thus far. And it's interesting because as surgeons, we are frequently kind of dropped in. I mean, we're groomed into it. It takes a little bit of time to become a surgeon and to become, you know, to gain that level of responsibility. But nobody really, you know, I mean, frequently when we're in the operating room now, I mean, you're the team leader, you know, along with, you know, I mean, I'm very collaborative with the anesthesia team at UCLA. They're very, very talented people. And together we take care of patients, but nobody ever really teaches us how to be leaders. You know, mm-hmm. we just kind of become leader. You know, we go through medical school. We don't get any kind of formal leadership training, and we go through residency and we do surgeries and we do, you know, but nobody, we kind of, you know, all of a sudden you're done and you have to be a leader by default. You know, you're in the, you know, you're dropped in the OR, and then everybody's looking to you to be in charge. And so I think that, if in medical school they could teach some of the, you know, some of the principles of leadership and dealing and, you know, with your colleagues and organizational behavior. I mean, I think if we learn more of those concepts, you know, I think that patient outcomes would probably be better, and teams would work better together. Surgeons are not always known to be the best leaders or sometimes the easiest people to work with. And so I think that I can tell you, even at, you know, after taking organizational behavior my first quarter, I really feel I've changed, you know, my behavior slightly to be able to you know, to be a better leader, to be you know, a better manager. And you know, I'm sure that's only gonna, you know, I'm sure it's only going to improve.
Who did you have for organizational behavior first fall?
John Ullman.
Oh, professor. Okay,
yeah,
very good.
I thought was just fantastic. I mean, I really took home a lot of the lessons that we learned in that class. And you know, we actually had a project where we had to go back to our organization and get feedback from you know, members of your team with regard to what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong. And, you know, I got some surprising feedback. You know, I mean, sometimes you think you're doing things better than you are. And so, and you know, the overall purpose of the project was to kind of modify your behavior and mm-hmm. change the things, you know, that weren't so great. And I felt like I've tried to do that. And overall, I mean, I think it's been really beneficial. So I look forward to, you know, to taking more classes like that and even, you know, more classes from Dr. Ullman if possible.
Yeah, he gifted me with an hour of his time about two summers ago and took me through some quick, wasn't quick, it took an hour, but he asked me a series of questions and he sort of netted it out. You're an integrator. And he helped me see some things about myself in just in a 1 hour interaction that I didn't know. And then before the podcast, we spoke about Diego Benitez, one of your first year classmates. And he, on his podcast, talked about Professor Bendersky's, another professor of the same first quarter organizational behavior class. And that's changed the way he's running his company. He's made on the court real time changes to upgrade, you know, just like kind of the real time applicability of getting an MBA while you are still working.
Yeah. And so. I think that's really what I want to take most out of business school. I think with regard to my future plans and you know, part of being a physician in this changing climate, you know, changing financial climate, changing administrative climate, is kind of knowing the language of business. I feel like the things that I've learned in business school thus far, I think it was somewhat of a weakness in my knowledge base and skill set before, you know, coming to Anderson. And I had, you know, this, I feel like I've had a tremendous opportunity to have the UCLA Anderson School literally, you know, walking distance from where I work. And so I think that, mm-hmm. If I hadn't taken advantage of this resource, of this fantastic school, I mean, I think I would have regretted it.
Yeah, you may have the best. You may have the best commute of anyone.
It's great. Yeah,
and tell the OR story. Like, how many times have you guys operated together, and who figured out who was who? How did that happen?
Well, you know, it's funny. The last time, I feel kind of bad. We were talking about this earlier. I felt kind of bad during the last case because we were in the middle of a case. So there was a patient who was scheduled to have a heart transplant, and during the workup of the heart transplant, the patient literally was transferred to UCLA and the heart was like ready to be put in. And they had to cancel the transplant because they found that he had a vascular problem. So he had an aneurysm in his iliac artery, which is something that vascular surgeons fix. You know, we fix that, but they wouldn't go through, you know, that he wasn't cleared for the transplant without fixing it. And so, you know, the goal was to get this guy a transplant as fast as possible. And so we were able to get him in that night. And we fixed the aneurysm. And we were kind of in the middle of the case, and it was a little, there was a portion of it that was a little sticky, a little stressful. And I look over and I see Aviva. I go, oh, hey, that's Aviva. So, and she said, oh, everything's going fine, JC, no problem. And I know she had some concerns about, you know, the patient's blood pressures, right?
Yeah, he had an artificial assist device, so it's actually very difficult to measure blood pressure, which is a pretty integral part of our job. We need to know what the blood pressure is and address it appropriately. So we had our own challenges. We were talking about that because he said, I'm sorry, you know, I wanted to chat, but we were kind of involved. And I said, it's okay. I was sort of worried about my own things too. You know, we all had our, yeah. I mean, our issues we were focused on.
It's interesting because these are situations. I mean, so this is somebody who literally does not have a functioning heart. So that he has a device, you know, that's implanted. And I think Dick Cheney had the same thing for a while, but you have a device that's actually pumping.
It's like a little motor.
It's a little motor that's pumping blood through your body. The heart's not doing much work, you know, because it's failing.
Oh my God.
And it's one of those things where in these kind of situations, these patients have very, very little reserve. You know, if any little thing goes wrong, it's a big deal, you know? And so it's nice to be able to look over and see Aviva walk in and see that she was the anesthesiologist in charge. And I said, well, you know, that made me feel a little better, you know, but,
so you guys had worked together on cases prior to that?
Yeah, we have. This was just a couple weeks ago. JC just told me actually that the guy got a heart a couple days later and has already gone home.
He went
so
home.
That's good news.
He was able to have a successful transplant. Yeah. So all in all, it worked out, huh?
That's amazing. Oh my goodness. Well, yeah, we talk about networking and, you know, running into other FEMBAs out in the real world, but you guys.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember actually how we figured out, I don't know. I mean, we'd worked together, you know, over the years when I was a resident, obviously. I don't know at what point. because they figured out that we were going to be in the program.
Right. Well, because
starting
as a resident, you rotate through vascular only through certain periods, right? Mm-hmm. And then you rotate through, you know, other, you know, specialties. And so Aviva was definitely a familiar face, you know, in the operating room.
Did you know that she had done the Anderson program already? Or?
You know, I knew when I came to research the program, and I think I spoke with you.
Okay, maybe
and several other people.
Yeah, I always brag about you.
And then, I think that you showed me her picture. And I said, "Oh yeah, I know Aviva, of course."
Oh, maybe that was it. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So, that's it's been interesting. I mean, I see an increasing number of physicians getting their MBA, and I think that a lot of that may come from, you know, the uncertainty of the economic, you know, future of medicine. I mean, you have Obamacare, and then potentially you don't have Obamacare, and then you have Obamacare again. You know what I mean? So it's one of those situations where, you have people talking about Medicare imploding at some point and not being able to be sustained, which would be, you know, devastating for us because, you know, 60%+ of my patients, at least, you know, my patients are older, you know, they're elderly for the most part, are on Medicare. And so what do you do, you know, at that point, what do you do? I mean, where do physicians make their living? Where do hospitals, you know, how does the medical system maintain itself? And it's one of those things, if you don't know the language and if you're not able to be a part of, an active part of the conversation, then, you know, we're at the mercy of non-physicians, that make those decisions. I think we need to be the policymakers in that respect.
Yeah. I'll put in a shameless plug here for the Business of Healthcare course, where we discuss all of these topics Tuesday nights. No, but it's a very good point. There's a lot of changes that are being made. And I think historically, maybe physicians are left out of a lot of these conversations. But I think we're seeing more and more that obviously, you know, the doctors and nurses and other practitioners need to be really an integral part of figuring out how we move forward.
Well, and tell us a little bit more about the class, because here we are, you know, 11 months after graduation, and now you're back as a professor.
Well,
how did that come about?
I would say I'm a co-instructor.
Co-instructor. So okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to give you a promotion I'm not qualified to give.
You know, the chairman of my department, Dr. Aman Mahajan from anesthesiology, who is an MD PhD MBA, so he actually, has
even more initials.
Even more degrees. But a very, very bright guy. But he was asked to actually teach the course. He's collaborated with a few different professors here at Anderson on a few different projects. He's been involved with that. So they asked him to teach this course this spring, and he brought me on board as a co-instructor, I think thinking that my experience here would kind of give me a unique perspective and maybe what the students would like and how to really deliver that to them effectively. So we've been working on that, and it's so far it's been going well, I think.
I want to take that class.
Maybe next year. If they invite us back, you know, we'll come back next year.
Well, I love it. And I hear both of you talking about the big picture, you know, Affordable Care Act and what's happening to society. And then I like your kind of specific, like there's a post-graduation reality that maybe 30% of your job has this whole new non-medical, you know, you've just actually opened up. There's one thing to survive the whole macro level, what's happening to our society. And there's another thing to just provide some personal satisfaction.
Yeah, it's a differentiator on, you know, for my own personal career.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I want to watch both of your times because it's super precious. So we've spent a lot more time than I thought we would on medicine, which is great because that's probably the most. But I want to give people a little bit of, let's go back and forth. We'll again start with you, Aviva, and just a little bit about Flex and how that kind of gave you even the possibility to do graduate school because you've got such high demand lifestyle. So kind of your Flex experience, and then you changed along the way, and then we'll hear from JC still in it.
So absolutely, and like JC said earlier, there was no way I could have done this in residency without the option of Flex. So that's one weekend a month, right? Or every 3 weeks, basically. Because in residency, like in a lot of surgical fields, you have periods of time you're on call, your schedule is very all over the place, and there was no way with my residency that I could guarantee, you know, two nights a week that I would not have any call responsibilities or every Saturday. That was also off the table. So I was able to get one weekend a month, you know, off. And that's when I would come to class. Initially, we didn't really factor in all of the other work that needed to be done.
Yeah, what was that adjustment like? Because you also have classmates and groupmates. Can we do a Google Hangout, as you mentioned?
Definitely, yeah. The biggest challenge, I would say, was in working with other students. And I think trying to get them to understand that I wasn't trying to avoid a meeting and I wasn't trying to be lazy, but I just really had no control over my schedule a lot of times. And so scheduling a time to meet, you know, I almost could never commit specifically to a time. And I think, you know, certain people were a little bit more understanding than others. I had in my GAP group, when we did GAP, actually, sometimes they would come to the hospital to meet.
Yeah, who? I've actually done a podcast with one
of your... Yeah, Kara.
Oh, okay.
Kara Viviani was in my group. So, you know...
She talked about meeting you in the hallway outside of...
Yeah, they would come. You know, there were times I couldn't leave, and they would come to the hospital, and sometimes I'd get paged and have to run away, and they would just keep meeting, and then I'd come back when I could. But, you know, it was... And I have to say, in other classes, it did not go as well. And people, you know, understandably, because they're all making time out of their schedules, too, you know, and everyone has other things that they're doing and families. So I know that, you know, I'm not the only person with a busy schedule. But it definitely was that, I think, was the trickiest part, was just finding a way to make that work.
And that, yeah. I think for anybody on the listening to the podcast who's either admitted and getting ready to begin or considering the program.
Yeah.
How do you choose your classmates? And, you know, I mean, FEMBA replicates real life. Mm-hmm. There's not enough time. There's too much to do.
Of course.
And you have to make,
You know, you have five people in a group and everyone has their own, you know, most people do have full-time jobs and a lot of people do have families, you know, and some people are traveling for work. So, you know, I think earlier on in the program, it was harder. You didn't know people as well, but you kind of figure out who either has similar schedules or is more willing to work kind of, you know, sequentially, where you're maybe sharing things with each other over email that you don't necessarily have to all be meeting at the same time. But you kind of make that work. And I think that really, I did all of my core classes in Flex, and that, you know, there's no other way that would have happened. At some point, I started transitioning where I would do maybe one Flex class and then one during the week. As I got further on in residency, I was able to get a little bit more time where I could get a day a week blocked out. And then I could come. I did some classes actually with the full-time students, like during the day, in the morning. And it was interesting to get that experience too. You know, you meet different students, so everyone has different backgrounds. And there's something, you know, that's also nice about coming every week to campus instead of just once a month. I think it's a great option, but I think it's really nice if you can to also have a more regular kind of contact with your professors, the other students, and being here on campus too.
Did the full-time students figure out who you were after a while?
Some of them may have.
You flew kind of low under the radar.
Yeah, you know, I was just like a random new person in the class. But no, it was fun. It was great to meet, you know. It definitely allows you to meet more people because your Flex cohort is pretty consistent throughout the core. So it does expand who you're meeting, which is great for networking too.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And how about you? So you're, you know, 2.5 quarters in. How is Flex so far? Is it working for you? And
The schedule is working for me, but like Aviva touched upon, I mean, I think that it's a very, very challenging curriculum, and I probably have to say that it's the academics of it are probably more challenging than I expected. I mean, I always, you know, did great in undergrad. I did very well in medical school, you know, but sometimes you think, God, that was 20 years ago. You know what I mean? So I feel like a lot of my classmates, I mean, I think that from top to bottom, the individuals in this class are spectacular. I mean, they're extremely talented, extremely intelligent. And Aviva and I are around people who are very, very smart. You know, I mean, our residents are from, you know, the Ivy League, and I mean, to get a residency fellowship at UCLA is very competitive. You're around, you know, MD, PhDs and, you know, people from very, very top schools. And, you know, I mean, it's no different in Anderson. I think that you have a very, very talented class of people. That being said, you know, with regard to having to compete against them, I mean, it's been tough. I mean, you have, you know, some finance majors and engineers and, you know, people who are very, very, you know, good with numbers. I personally feel like I'm a little rusty in that area, you know, but, and it's funny because the way of thinking in medical school is different than the way of thinking in business school. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's really, I think in medical school, I mean, they're both, you know, very challenging, but I think, you know, in medicine, you have a lot of memorization. You have a lot of, you know, you develop a certain way of studying and absorbing things because you have to learn, you have to memorize, you have to learn it, right? Whereas I think with these classes, it's more conceptual. You know, there are concepts that you have to learn where, you know, there's no memorization involved. I mean, all the exams that we take are open book and they give you a sheet of notes, but at the same, it's still very challenging. So, I think that that's been an interesting part of it. You know, the Flex program is really the only program that I could have done, at least with my schedule, even though I live 5 minutes away. I'm at the mercy of the operating room during the week. And so I have, you know, just because you have a case scheduled at 2:30 doesn't mean it's going to go at 2:30. I mean, it probably means it's going to go at 7:30, you know, the way that the UCLA OR is. I mean, I tell patients that the UCLA operating room is like LAX. You know, you have 20, you know, jumbo liners taking off and landing at the same time. And you have liver transplants, heart transplants, traumas, you know, you have a level one trauma center. And it's just, if you have a first start at 7:30, that's really the only case that's going to start on time. And then after
the first flight of the day.
Yeah, of course. Right.
Yeah.
And so after that,
you're never know.
Yeah. So you know, it would be very hard for me to come in Tuesday, Thursday during the week because I don't know, you know, I mean, sometimes I get home very late and my cases don't go on time. So, like Aviva.
Same issue.
Yeah. Like Aviva, like Aviva touched upon, I think that I can do 1 day a week. I'm sorry, 1 weekend a month. 1 weekend a month is what's in. I think that's been very reasonable. I have 2 kids as well. And, you know, balancing family time, you know, with work time, with school time is a challenge, but I knew it would be. But so far it's been doable.
And the, people always want to know about the pre-recorded component of Flex. That works okay for you then? Because that's asynchronous.
Yes.
You can watch that at your, so how do you allocate your time? Because, and I also hear people talk about how much self-discipline does Flex require? To just stay on
a lot.
So I would say that's definitely key. And again, you know, I don't think I factored that in initially when I was telling my residency program I just needed 1 weekend a month, you know, no problem. Because I quickly realized that I needed a lot more time. And the way I kind of got around it is I would try to block out certain evenings as kind of my study time. And if I could get through it, you know, ahead of time or in advance, then that was some free time. But I realized that I couldn't just kind of wait and find a time for it. You know, I would always try to squeeze it in where I could, but I needed to know I had a few hours during the week that I knew I'd be able to do it if I wasn't able to get to it sooner.
Yeah. I mean, definitely. I think that, the videos are very well organized, and the curriculum and the classes in general are very well organized. All the materials are online, usually for the entire quarter, you know, before the class even starts. I think that that's helpful. The amount of video time is not overwhelming. You know, I'd say maybe some weeks more than others, but. Yeah, I mean, I will go in the morning, do a surgery, come back to my office, watch a video, wait for my other patient to be, you know, brought out on the table, go back, do surgery, come back, you know. And I remember I was joking with you, Dylan, at some point. I said, you know, I'm more stressed about the academic work than the surgery part of it, you know. But
well, you know how to do the surgery, right?
Yeah.
You're an expert in that. This is new.
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
Yeah. But it's been, I would encourage, and you know, there's a reason why there are 8 physicians in the class. I mean, I would encourage other physicians, you know, to, you know, if they're interested in getting their MBA, to definitely look into this, you know, the flex, you know, part of this program, which is a tremendous, it's just a tremendous resource and, you know, and thing to have here, you know, close, you know, in LA, a beautiful city.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that. And I guess as we kind of draw to a close here, I promised our listeners, you know, why don't you guys help us mere mortals be more awesome? You know, so a couple of, this is my new question I've added to the podcast this year, and I love it because it's fascinating. You know, like mm-hmm. as you look at, you know, you have a commitment to excellence, you know, your personal life, your professional life, and then here at Anderson, your academic life, yet again, another degree. It's like, how do you sift through, you know, life gives us way too many choices. So mm-hmm. like a couple, you know, like anything you want to talk about, you know, a hack or two or a couple of things that are in your mind recently that have been working for you for your professional productivity.
Sure. I would say the main thing I think for me, and this took me a while to figure out, but I prioritize actually what I think is most important to me. And a lot of that will sometimes come down to personal care. So making sure I'm well taken care of so that I can do a good job in everything else, you know, exercise, eating well, having time with family and friends. And I know that's probably not what you expect to hear in a person like a productivity hack, but I think that the times that I've, you know, focused only on work or in school or, you know, whatever it was that was going on, and I lost track of that, I was not doing well in anything, you know. So I think it's really important to make sure that you set aside a certain amount of time, you know, every day if you can, even if it's just half an hour, but just to do something that's going to make you feel good, and to make sure that, you know, you can continue to bring energy to everything that you're doing. So I think that's incredibly important, and I think it really helps you in a way expand the time in your day. Like taking time to exercise makes me much more productive for the rest of the day. So I would say that's a big thing. I keep a lot of lists, and I make multiple lists in multiple locations mm-hmm. that duplicate a lot of things, but it helps me to write things down. And sometimes if I'm feeling really overwhelmed, I put things on the list that I know I'm going to do anyway, like really stupid things like take a shower, because mm-hmm. then I feel better when I cross it off. Like I just feel like I've accomplished some things. So sometimes you just need to put low-hanging fruit on there to kind of give yourself that push. And the last thing is, you know, to say no to things that you don't really want to do that aren't going to serve you. And that, you know, because there's always going to be a lot of demands on your time. People ask you to help out with different things, to go to certain events. And if I don't really want to do it, or if I don't have time to do it, I don't do it. Mm-hmm. So I think it's hard, you know, it's hard to say no, but I think that's something that you really need to kind of get used to, prioritizing what matters to you.
Oh, that's a great list. Now, and I heard you say everything except sleep when you went through your list.
Well,
I heard you say
that,
nutrition, friends.
Oh, yeah.
Because I always wonder, do you guys just not sleep? Is that how you get it all done?
No, we sleep.
Yeah. That's on. Yeah, sorry. I thought that was a given.
Okay. No,
yeah,
I'm just checking.
That's one thing that I don't, you know, I try not to go below 6 hours a night.
I've never been able to.
That's my misperception. Yeah.
No, I should have mentioned that, because some people, I think, don't sleep.
People don't sleep. I mean, I have.
But
partners,
absolutely,
yeah.
you need to sleep as well.
Yeah, I've never been able to make it without sleep. I mean, it's one of those things where I think one of the most challenging things, you know, with regard to surgery is if you're on call, you know, and I'm on call this week, you know, till Sunday, you know, 24/7, you know, till the end of the week. Is when you get called in the middle of the night for an emergency, and then you have to deal with your schedule the next day. So let's say you get called in at 2 a.m, you're in the operating room, you don't get done till 5 or 6, and then you have a full schedule of patients that you have to see, or, you know, or more elective cases, you know, that. So there are actually times when I've said to the patient coming in, you know, during the next day, I said, look, you know, the patient that had a scheduled surgery the next day, I've said, look, I will do your surgery, but I've been up all night. So I just want to tell you, if you want to reschedule to another day, then that's fine. And you know, I bet 99% of them reschedule.
Thank you for that. I'll definitely take you up on that.
I try to be honest, but you know, with regard to,
I'll do my best.
You know, with regard to life hacks, I think that it, you know, for me, it really has been about really achieving my goals and setting forth and doing things that I'm committed to. You know what I mean? So it's one of those things, you know, my father was a pediatrician for 30 years, recently retired, you know, but he was a pediatrician that thought like a surgeon. And my dad, I honestly don't think that in 30 years ever took a sick day off. I mean, so they, he had that tremendous amount of discipline where, you know, he and I remember he'd come home really tired, and it's one of those things. So I, you know, I picked that up, I think, from him. And the things that make you successful in surgery are not necessarily knowing the most or, you know, having the most knowledge or you know, really things that make you successful in surgery, I tell residents and medical students and fellows is, you know, showing up on time, you know, caring about the patient, you know, staying scrubbed in the operating room, you know, scrubbing in on every case if you're a medical student, even if it's 6 or 8 hours, you know, I mean, it's hard work and discipline, just like, you know, just like in every other field, you know, I mean, if you bring that to any other field, you know, inside or outside of medicine, you're going to be successful. But I think in surgery, those are things that you have to have. I mean, when I played, you know, I played football in high school. And
really,
I played football in high school, and you know, I could never play now, you know, obviously, but you know, one of the things that I always tell people that football prepared me for surgery more than any other thing I think in my life, you know, and there was we used to do, you know, for example, we used to do circuit weight training, right? So every guy on the team would have a certain station. Right. And then every 30 seconds you'd rotate to the next machine and you do, you know, you had the coach kind of sitting there yelling at you and, you know, do as many reps as you can. And then 30 seconds you switch to the next. And there was one station in particular, which was a pull-up station. Right. But nobody, by the time you got to the station, nobody can do any more pull-ups because their muscles were shot, you know. So really the only goal of that station was to just hang. Right.
Yeah.
And we were in this sweaty weight room that was located, you know, went to Crespi High School here in the Valley. We were in this sweaty weight room that was just, you know, everybody was tired, exhausted. And you had to hang for 30 seconds. And if you didn't hang, you know, and if your feet touched the ground, then they would restart the, you know, they would restart the circuit. So it's one of those things, you know, when you're in surgery and you're in a case in the middle of the night, you can't leave unless you're done. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So those are things that I've kind of translated over to, you know, to my career now.
Sucking it up.
Yeah, sucking it up, basically. Exactly, you're exactly right.
That's the lesson.
Sorry, that was a little long-winded story, but...
No, but, yeah. it's the reality of life. Well, thank you, guys. I was honored to get an hour of both of your time. That I don't even know what your billing rate would be, but I'm sure I can't afford it. You've been listening to Aviva Regev, Clinical Instructor, Department of Anesthesiology here at UCLA Health and FEMBA 2016. And Juan Carlos Jimenez, Associate Clinical Professor of Vascular Surgery and a FEMBA candidate, member of the class of 2019. Thank you both for your time. We very much appreciate having you with us. And I know, Aviva, you've got to go save some lives, and you'll be doing the same this afternoon. So thank you both very much.
Okay. Thanks for having us, Dylan. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much. It's been an honor.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. And we'll try to follow up this week with something great next week. I hope we can do it.